Okay, let's get started. Okay, we're going to continue from last week. We were in the middle of the first sheet in the bottom half on X utensils. So just as a little bit of background to get us back up and running as far as where we are up to and then into tonight's discussion. By the end of tonight, we will hopefully, Mir Hashem, have discussed the first three categories of muktzah. And if last week was confusing, I don't blame you, it was confusing for me as well, but it will become clear as we learn more and more categories. Once we have more information, we'll be able to distinguish between what puts things in various different categories, and then we'll go over all of them and have a better sense of what is considered muktzah and what is not considered muktzah, and what are the various categories of the muktzah that they are. So last week, we began with the origin and the reasons for muktzah, the reasons why the sages enacted this concept to protect us from various different violations of Shabbos, or to create the serenity, the menucha of Shabbos. And we started with the general guidelines in which we need to define, first of all, if we're dealing with a utensil or a non-utensil. That's the first point in which, when we have an item in front of us, in terms of determining what it was. So the first category that we started learning about yesterday is this category of muktzah machmas gufo, Roman numeral 2 on the top of sheet number, page number 2. So it was the sheet from last week, on the top of that second page, Roman numeral number 2, things which are in English referred to as inherently muktzah. The Hebrew phrase for that is known as muktzah machmas gufo, that it itself is muktzah, and that refers to items which are not a utensil. It has a utensilless status. It's not food, and therefore, in effect, on Shabbos, is going to become basically purposeless. There's nothing that you can do with it. It is what we refer to as inherently muktzah. The classic examples we had in letter B were sticks and stones and things of the like, which you cannot use. They're inherently, they have no shape, no form. They're not a utensil. They have no purposeful activity that you can do with them, and they're considered inherently muktzah. So some of the applications which we had been discussing at the end of the day last week were sand at a beach, or dead rodent or insects, blank sheets of paper or notebooks. All of these things have no inherent value in Shabbos because there's nothing you can really do with them. Or home fixtures which were not yet installed, tiles on the floor that you're waiting to install, lighting fixtures, laundry detergents, bars of soap, household plants and candles, money and coins. All of these things on Shabbos you can't do anything with. They're not a utensil that has some purpose or function that can be used on Shabbos. And because they are inherently functionless on Shabbos, they have the status of muktzah machmas gufo, inherently muktzah, and you cannot move them from their place on Shabbos.
What's the actual meaning for machmas?
Machmas means because of, or as a result of.
And gufo?
Gufo means itself. So in other words, as we'll distinguish tonight, other types of muktzah, this category is muktzah because of itself, meaning it itself has no purpose. So it's not that the sages, like for example, let's just take a pen. Why is a pen muktzah? A pen is muktzah not because it doesn't have a function, it has a very purposeful function. Well, on Shabbos, its function is prohibited, so the sages put on the pen, because this is a utensil which is used for a prohibited purpose, they said, it's muktzah. But as opposed to this category, which it's just inherently muktzah. It has no purpose, and therefore it is set aside. Again, going with the primary definition that we had for muktzah, muktzah are things which are set aside, taken out of the realm of things that you are planning on using over Shabbos. Okay, so continuing with letter E, X utensils, the name of the category in which things can become muktzah machmas gufo, even though they were originally very valuable and were in the form of a utensil. But if they break, or if they become unusable, then they become muktzah machmas gufo. They become inherently muktzah because they no longer have a purpose. So the first of these categories are, as I mentioned just now, broken utensils. So that once the utensil ceases to function, it becomes muktzah, because now there's nothing that you can do with it. It has no purpose, and it becomes into this category of muktzah. Now, the broken piece that actually comes off of, let's say you have a plate and it breaks into two, so both the little broken piece, the big piece, whatever it is, if it is unusable, becomes muktzah. Now, sometimes when it breaks, it has a danger component to it. That the broken piece is not safe to leave lying around, that's a different story, and that you certainly can move preferably indirectly, but we'll talk more about how to move that. But if it is a situation of danger, that is a different situation. But assuming not that way, the broken pieces become muksa. Now, if the pieces are still usable, but just not as originally used, then it is not muksa on Shabbos, so that if something breaks, in the times of the Gemara, this was much more prevalent, where they would look for all sorts of things to cover up their vases, or to cover up their jugs, or whatever they would do. If something breaks, and you still have an alternate purpose in which you would use it, then that obviously does not become muksa, even though it's broken, because it can still be used. Similarly, things which were discarded. So once you throw it out, it also becomes muksa, because you've designated it for non-use on Shabbos. There's a little caveat to that, which I wrote down over here, that if it's not broken when you discarded it, then it's technically not yet muksa, because it still has its function, and just the fact that you decided not to use it or discarded it, it is not inherently muksa, which is an interesting halakha, because of the fact that it retains its value, retains its status of a utensil, just that you discarded it does not make it muksa. But what are some applications of this, or just a few? Buttons is a big one that's worth talking about. Buttons really doesn't fit in here, but this is where it's often discussed, so I'll mention it over here. It really is applicable a little bit later tonight, in which we're going to talk about a lot of practical things. When a button falls off, so here you have this general issue. I had a jacket, I had a whatever it is, it had a button on it, and now the button fell off and it's on the floor. What is the status of that button as it lies there on the floor? The general rule of a broken item is that it becomes muksa. Now the button is not inherently broken, and it can still be used after Shabbos, and you'll put it back on. So there's a big machlokas in the poskim, a big dispute as to what to do with a broken, with a button, which is usable, not today on Shabbos, because I can't sew it back on today, but I have every intention of using it, and it's still entirely whole in the shape and form that it is. I just need to put it aside and save for Shabbos. It's a big dispute. Generally, we rely on the poskim who hold that it is not muksa, and you are allowed to move them, assuming you have the intention of reusing it, which is why you'd pick it up in the first place. If you didn't have any intention of reusing it, you'd probably leave it where it is. But if you're not planning on using it, then it is muksa, and you have to then discard it in a way that's halakhically appropriate. If it fell off and you're not planning on reattaching it, then it is muksa on the floor, because it's been detached from your garments, and it's muksa on the floor. You would not be allowed to pick it up and throw it out. Certainly not going to be something that's dangerous to lie there on the floor, unless it's big enough that somebody would trip on it, but it's not really very likely. So if you're not planning on using the button, it does become muksa. But if you are planning on sewing it back on after Shabbos, the general halacha is that we hold that it is not muksa, and you could pick it up and put it away to have for Shabbos.
Can you pick it up without a shoe
on? Yeah, I mean, it's not muksa. We hold that it is not muksa.
What if you have a toddler? You think the baby will pick the button and put it in the
shop? All right, well then obviously you have a danger issue.
Can you pick it with your
foot? 100%. That you could always do, yeah.
Let's say you're walking from shoulder and it falls, are you allowed to pick it up off the ground?
If you're planning, yeah. Assuming there's an air, right. Mm-hmm. Correct. You have the same thing with a broken shoe and broken glasses. Once they become unusable, they become muksa. So now with a broken shoe, usually you're just going to discard it. They don't really fix shoes, so it's just, I mean, you can, but not as common. But broken glasses is an issue which, when it happens, it becomes muksa, and it's a very valuable thing that you can't pick it up and move it, though, because it has become muksa. It's unusable in the state that it's in right now. And
but you're moving in a different way.
Right, we're going to talk about, when we finish all the categories, there is a way of moving muksa indirectly, whether that's with your foot or with some other item when you push it aside. But to pick it up and carry it and put it in your pocket to take home with you, you're not going to be able to do.
That must be a way. If you dropped your glasses and they're worth $300 and they break when they've been dropped, you can't. Like, one lens is still good, that's worth something.
Right, but it's unusable. It is unusable and it becomes muksa. So,
if it's on you, I don't know if it's on them, this part comes off.
And if it's usable, in other words, the question.
It's still on you.
And so if it's usable, if you could walk around like that, then it's still usable and it's not going to be muksa.
One lens is still usable. You can still consider it to the better half of being usable. You give it the benefit of the doubt of that, right?
Meaning, what's the situation?
It's
like
got one eye.
If you saw it with one eye, because the other...
Meaning you put it in and you just see out of one eye, the other eye is not?
Yeah, so if
is that considered usable? I don't know. Does anybody walk around with glasses like that? You could get very dizzy very fast.
So you could pick it up, but you could fix it after the shower.
Yeah, but right now it's not in a usable state.
The
Right now, it's not in usable state.
Could you put that lens in if it dropped and it didn't break?
Now, that's a separate issue of fixing things, and I don't know. I have a feeling putting a lens, depending on, see, they make so many different types of glasses today. So depending on the type of glasses, I don't know whether or not that would require more discussion. I'm not prepared, I don't know.
If you're walking and you see garbage in someone's front lawn that you potentially could use or want on Shabbos, if you're saying it's not mukzah.
So in other words, if it's not broken, it's just discarded, but it was not mukzah?
A dresser on Shabbos that you see that you love. Are you allowed to take it? Or no, because then you're acquiring something on Shabbos.
Well, taking on Shabbos is a different story. In other words, the fact that that you're not the initial owner...
But at this point, it's ownerless.
Yeah, you can't acquire something on Shabbos.
Even if it's ownerless.
Yeah. I don't know that if you saw that or not. That's an interesting question. I'm not sure. I will try to remember. It's best if you'll send me an email to remind me to look at that. I'm not sure if in that case that would count. I don't know. All right, let's move on to the next major category. I want to go over this again. After we see the next two categories, we'll have a better sense of this first category, a little more of a background. Okay, the next major category is known as Kli Shemalachto Le'Isser. It's a Roman numeral, should be Roman numeral number 3, the top of page number 3. Utensils of prohibited use, in Hebrew known again as Kli Shemalachto Le'Isser. Kli, a vessel, utensil, Shemalachto, that its main function is Le'Isser. So what this basically means is a utensil whose primary function, primary again is the operative word here, for doing something prohibited on Shabbos. Now we define that because its majority of usages and its primary function is prohibited. For example, a pen. A pen's primary function is to write with, and therefore it is within this category of a Kli Shemalachto Le'Isser, a hammer. Hammer has several functions. You could use a hammer to crack nuts, you can use a hammer to crack a coconut, and that's commonly done. If you have a coconut in the house and you want to crack it open, you're going to take out a hammer. But the primary use of the hammer, the main 90 out of 100 times, the reason why you take the hammer out off the shelf is in order to hammer in a nail, take out a nail, or do something which would be considered bone as building, something which is prohibited on Shabbos. And therefore a hammer, even though it has two functions, is going to be in the class of Kli Shemalachto Le'Isser, a vessel which is prohibited because its main function. Similarly, a screwdriver, which is primarily used for building things, even though it's sometimes used for opening locks, would be considered within this category and is muksa. The reason for this muksa is obvious. Remember, we discussed a couple of different reasons why Chazal established muksa. The reason for this is obvious because since the primary use of these items are to do something which is prohibited on Shabbos, so the sages said, don't move them, because if you do, you're going to come to do the prohibited act. And therefore, they just simply knocked it off and made it muksa. Now, like we discussed last week, you can designate something for a prohibited, permitted use. Just like you can take a rock, which has no inherent value, and you could designate it as a doorstop or as a paperweight. You can take a kli shemalachto le'isser and say, this kli is not for prohibited purposes, this is for permitted purposes. So I brought as an example, certain types of screwdrivers are sold as door lock pickers. It's a particularly thin type of screwdriver, and it's specifically marketed and sold to be able to, and most houses, either apartments or some houses, have those types of locks that kids like to go into the room and close the knob and then close the door behind them on the way out, and the door is now locked and nobody's inside. So, or a child decided to lock himself inside, either doesn't want you to come in or isn't able to open it back up. So they make these little screwdrivers. Every parent should have one in their house, a grandparent, that allows you to... that is designated for a permitted use. You don't use that to screw in nails. You use that specifically for that. So that type of screwdriver would therefore not be considered a Kli Shemalachto Le'Isser, because it's not. Okay, just bring a couple of examples just to flush out what this idea is, and we'll talk more about what the concept is. Cooking pans. So cooking pans have a couple of different functions. You cook in them, and very often what you do is you bring it to the table in the dish that it was cooked in. So it actually serves two functions. It serves as a function as something that you cook with, and then it's a serving dish. A serving dish is obviously permitted on Shabbos. A cooking dish is obviously a utensil which is forbidden on Shabbos. So every dish that you have that has that dual role, one would determine what is its primary use, how do I use this in the majority ways, and that would define whether or not it is a kli shemalachto le'esur, a kli which is primarily used for a forbidden purpose, then would be muksa, or if it's a kli shemalachto le'hetur, that which is permitted. So cooking pans and pyrex, I got this out of Rabbi Bonner's sefer. I don't know if it's true in everyone else's kitchen. He understood, and this is totally subjective to what goes on in your house, that a pyrex pan would be more often used to serve, even though you didn't cook in it, and therefore even though you sometimes cook in it, it would be considered primarily a serving dish, and therefore would not have any muksa issues as opposed to some cooking type of pans which are primarily used to cook with and sometimes served with. But that's, again, it's a subjective thing. What is the primary use of the utensil in front of you, and that will determine whether or not it is muksa or not.
Well, I don't heat your food with a cooking dish, but you don't serve with that.
You heat your food with a cooking
dish on a pasta.
Yeah.
So on Friday night, you can't move the pasta because it's muksa.
Hold on a second. Okay, so now that we have this category of muksa, there's a very significant leniency with this category which is going to answer that question. Since this category of muksa is unique in that nothing inherent makes the item unprepared, meaning the item has prepared uses, it has permitted uses, it has non-permitted uses, it's just that the majority of the uses of this particular utensil is something which is not permitted, and the sages were the ones who were interested in protecting me from using it, meaning as opposed to the rock. The rock has no function on Shabbos. So it's inherently muksa. The sages, it's not prepared. The sages made the dish or the hammer not prepared because I didn't make this item muksa. I know that if I have a coconut, I'm going to want to use my hammer. But the sages came in and they said, any item whose primary use is for something prohibited, we are making muksa. There is two major leniencies with this category of muksa. Number one is in the little letter D. What's known as tzorech gufo. Tzorech gufo, tzorech means for the need of, and gufo means it's itself, meaning if you need it for itself. Basically meaning to say, if you need this item for itself, for its permitted use, then you are allowed to use it and it does not have the status of muksa. So, for example, if you need a hammer to crack open a coconut, that hammer is allowed to be moved to crack open the coconut on Shabbos. So that...
Can you actually open up a coconut on Shabbos?
And
you can bring the shell from a huge shell.
You can open up an orange, you can open up a cashew nut, whatever those things are called. That's pistachios. I don't think it'd be a problem. I think that's the example it's used often as to where you could... So you're actually allowed to use a hammer. So you have a coconut, you want to open it up on Shabbos, you can use a hammer because that is a permitted use of a hammer. And when you need the item for itself, for its permitted use, so then there's no takanim, there's no gzera of muksa. So that, for example, if you left a hammer outside and you wanted to bring it in because you're expecting rain, should be rain, so you're not allowed to bring it in because the hammer is muksa. But if you need the hammer for permitted use to do that which you're allowed to do with it, you are in fact allowed to use that hammer. We're going to talk a lot more about this. Let's just get all the principles in. You do not have to designate it before Shabbos. Exactly, correct. Meaning, correct, I'm glad you said that we could bring up that point, but it's not correct to do it because you do not need to designate it. You need to designate the first category, something which is inherently muksa and has no purpose, so it's purposeless. You need to create before Shabbos that the stone, sticks, sand, whatever, has a purpose on Shabbos. A hammer... The sages said because its primary use is something forbidden, you're not allowed to use it, and they gave a leniency, but if you need it for its purpose, permitted purpose, you are allowed to use it. There's a second leniency, and you'll see that these two go very much hand in hand, and that is known as tzorech mekomo, where you need the place in which the item is resting right now. So, for example, my hammer is on the chair on the dining room, and I need the chair because I'm having company, and somebody forgot to move it before Shabbos, so it's sitting there on the chair. So now what do I do? Well, if I need that chair, so then I'm allowed to pick up the hammer and put it away because I need the place that the hammer is in. And a hammer is only in the category of muksa of a utensil whose primary use is for a forbidden purpose that the sages said don't move. So this is a very major difference. And I will try, should I put this out? Right, so I have it right there in 1A. Let's say the hammer is on a chair that you were not planning on setting for Shabbos. Friday night... It's just two or three people eating with you, and there's hammers on one of the chairs that you're not planning on setting, and you're not going to be home for Shabbos lunch anyway, but it's really not Shabbos stick to have a hammer on the table. Well, do you need the hammer for permitted use? You don't need the hammer for permitted use. Is it in the way? You don't need its place. You just don't like that it's there, but you don't need its place. Under that circumstance, the hammer is muksa, and you're not allowed to move it. You're not allowed to move it off of the table either if it's on the other side of the table that you're not planning on using. Because you don't need its place. It's not in the way, and it is considered muksa. The leniency is, when you need its place, or you need it for its permitted purpose, you are then allowed to move it, and you can move it in the usual manner. You can pick it up, and once it's in your hand, you're allowed to put it wherever you would like, whether or not that's on the shelf, or it's in the other bedroom, wherever you want to put it, you are allowed to do so.
Presents a danger, like there's small children around and you forgot to move it. Can you move it some other way back where the hanger?
Yeah, and that we're going to talk about. That's, again, a separate category where, well, let's get the principles in. That already is a separate case in which you have a danger. This is just, it's in the way. You have a hammer on the table. You forgot to put it away. So, for example, number two, so you're allowed to remove it from the floor if it's in the way. Again, that, if in that case, you don't even need to, if it's in the way of children or whatever, so then you just pick it up, because this is not something which needs a sheen. A rock that's in the way needs to be dealt with in a different way than the hammer, because the hammer, right now it's in my way. This is in the category of utensils for prohibited use. It's in the way, pick it up and move it. But if it's already off to the side, or if it's in the corner of the room, so then it has a status of muksa. So it sort of toes that line, where if it's necessary you can move it, but not for such a purpose. So the general rule is in letter E, it may not be moved for its protection or for preserving it. If that's why you're moving it, you have no permissibility, no heter to move it. So if it's out in the rain, or if it's out in the sun, or you want to move it to a protected area that it shouldn't be stolen, all of those issues, something which was left outside, something which was left, you see it on the street, something which was left on wherever, so then you have to ask yourself, what category is this in? Oh, it's in a category where it was a prohibited, its main use is prohibited, so I'm only allowed to use it or move it if I need it itself, or if I need the place that it's in. And if you don't have either of those, you left something outside, and you're afraid it's going to rain, and you're afraid it's too hot, and it's going to get damaged by the sun, or you don't want it to be stolen, there is where the sages enacted the principle of muksa, and you would not be allowed to move it for that purpose. Now, another leniency is, because of the fact that this whole category is lenient, you are allowed to ask a non-Jew to move it for you. Since this is a lower level category of muksa, and muksa is in itself only rabbinic in nature, so then, if you needed, you would be allowed to ask a non-Jew to take your hammer inside and put it away for you if that circumstance presented itself to you. That's the basic rule of this category of Eklisha Malachto Le'ezer. Any questions on the principles? And we'll go through some applications which hopefully will further this principle.
Somewhere, though, you touch on how do you ask a non-Jew?
Can you ask nicely? Can you please move this inside the house?
I thought you couldn't do that.
You can. That's something. This is one of the circumstances in which you're allowed. In other words, you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to benefit from a non-Jew doing a malacha on Shabbos for you.
Okay.
So here, where he's not doing a real malacha, the only prohibition that the non-Jew would be violating would be muksa, and the category of muksa where he's violating is this lower level category of klisha malachta lisser, which you anyway have permitted uses on Shabbos.
Right.
The sages never created the prohibition of asking an undo in that circumstance. Okay, so here we'll get some practical stuff. This is stuff which happens often. You'll be hopefully surprised with some of the things which are actually permitted on Shabbos, which many of us, because we're just so afraid of touching anything, do not. Okay, easy one. Some basic ones which you probably would have done anyway without my saying so. Pots, pans, and other cooking and baking utensils. Now, all of those things are inherently considered muksa. Not inherently, I used the wrong word, that was the wrong category. All of those items are muksa, because pots, pans, and baking utensils, their primary use is cooking and baking, which is prohibited on Shabbos. So, what happens then is that after the food is removed from the pot or pan, your pot or pan is muksa, because its primary purpose is for something which is prohibited. So, there it is on the counter, you've taken the food out, it's there, it's muksa. Now, there The way that you would be allowed to move it is, A, if you still needed it for something, because since it's within this category of only a klishim lachtalis, if you needed that for something, you can move it. And the more important one, which happens more often, is what's known as graf shel ri'i, which we haven't really discussed. I believe I may have introduced it last week, but maybe not. Something which is very unpleasant, or almost disgusting, smelly, something like that. The sages never enacted any concept of muksan. You could just simply take it out. This is why dirty diapers are not considered muksan, though they obviously have no purpose. But you could throw them away because they are extremely unpleasant. A lot of issues with garbage fit into that. So a lot of times pots, after they're used, are particularly unpleasant. And then they would be allowed to be moved into a place where you want to get them out of the way. But if it is a cooking type pot, the status that it normally would have, unless there's still food in there, is that it would be muksa, unless there is a reason to have to move it, or if it's in the way. That would be the other head. If it's on your counter and you need your counter, so then you can move it. If you don't need your counter but you just don't like the way it looks, that would not be a reason to be allowed to move it. Now, you're allowed to come up with a reason why you need your counter. Whereas if you need your counter because you decided to prepare shal shudas on your counter instead of the kitchen table, you can, I need my counter. But just because you want to clean up, some of those items are muksa. And again, if it have to be in cleaning up on the Shabbos table, it would have to be something which is primary uses for cooking. A lot of the things which are brought out to the Shabbos table, their primary use is for serving. Those types of serving platters are not in this category. They are fine because they are not. This is only a certain type of pot, maybe a cholent pot, the leftover cholent and the cholent pot that you're planning on throwing away and not using. But even if you have enough food in there, then the status of the food would take over. But if it's totally empty, that's where you might have a problem. But a lot of these things are considered serving dishes. Most of the things, at least I know from my table, that which gets back into the kitchen counter after the meal, were serving dishes. Or at least used equally for serving as for cooking, and then they wouldn't have any problem with that.
Why do people put in their stove to wait till after Shabbos? Isn't the stove muksa at that point? No. I mean, it's not on. You store the dirty stuff in the...
No, a stove will be the same thing as we'll talk about a car. Dabin, you mean?
No, I mean
Yeah. We'll skip that. If you look down to number F. Car doors. A car can be used for several purposes. Its primary use is obviously to drive in, get you from point A to point B. But a car is a wonderful place to store things. Right, things that you're supposed to bring from point A to point B, and you forget that our cars usually are storage dumps for all sorts of stuff, and that is a function that a car has. So a person has, there's absolutely no reason why a person could not use his car to store things on. The problem that we usually have is that most car doors, a light goes on when you open up the car door, so you'd obviously have to take care of that. But if you did, and I know certainly families with small children usually disarm all lights that go on in a car because otherwise your battery will be drained every morning when you go out to drive carpool the following day. If you have a car that's already been disarmed that the light does not go on, there is not a problem. I repeat, it is not muksa to open up your car door, put something in your car, and leave it there for Shabbos. Now, there is a marzayin problem that if you're in a place where people are going to say, it doesn't have the right feel, but if you're in a situation where it's not a problem, I remember I was in camp one summer, and for in Camp Marasha, Tisha and Kolo there, Tisha B'Av was a place where people would come from all over, even the guys who had been in the camp in previous years, they would like to come to this camp for the summer, and they would spend Tisha B'Av up in camp. So the camp would be flooded with people for Tisha B'Av. And one year, I remember, when I was up there, Tisha B'Av was on a Motzei Shabbos. So we went to a regular Shabbos, and then right after Shabbos, we went into Tisha B'Av, and the camp was flooded. So we had no place. People did not have beds to sleep. So people slept in their cars over Shabbos. They would disarm the lights, and they would sleep in the car. Right. But they wouldn't get in when they opened the door the first time. But a car, which is inherently something which would be muksa, but again, moving the car would be a problem, which we're not doing. Using the car, it's like sitting on a rock, is not a problem. Now, closing the car door is a different story, because the reason why you're allowed to open the car door is because you need it, because you want to use the permitted function of the car, which is what you're allowed to do. I want to use it as a storage bin. Unless the item needed, unless you put a permitted item in the car that needed to be protected, the car there would become muksa. But that's the siphon, because whatever you're going to be putting in there probably needs protection. Therefore, it's for the use of that permitted item that you're going to be then closing the door behind you, which is usually going to be the situation. But you're technically allowed to do that with a car on Shabbos. So the same thing with the oven would be the same thing. In other words, an oven is commonly used to store things. When you're busy in the kitchen and you got lots of dishes, it's not uncommon to use an oven to store it. It's just a nice place that's away from everything and you can hide things in it. People store things. So that has a permitted use. So the oven would generally therefore be classified as a kli shemalachta l'isser. Its primary function is certainly something which is certainly prohibited on Shabbos, but you're allowed to use a kli shemalachta l'isser. You're allowed to use a vessel which primary purpose is forbidden for its purpose or if it's in the way. And in this case, you'd be using the oven for its permitted usage. Just like you're allowed to use a hammer to crack open a coconut, so you're allowed to open up your oven door and store your dishes in there because that's its permitted use.
Regarding a soup pot that you only use for cooking, and then you have soup left in it, what's designated at that point with all
the soup? With the soup in it, everything becomes batel, everything becomes subservient to the food. Food is the primary thing.
The whole soup pot, any one that I want.
Yeah, your soup is, everything becomes, the question is if you finish the soup.
Yeah, that's
then already, now your pot becomes mukta, unless it becomes gross, which at some point it would, but before that point, it's mukta.
You have to take it off the table Friday night, just because you know
I've never been in a home where it was like left because of mukta, but technically, I'm assuming that's what happens. In other words, it becomes something that's just gross left out. It doesn't take long before it... Or you can make it a little bit extra, but even so, it really won't take very long. An empty soup pot by the end of the meal is already cold. It's not very pleasant.
You can't put water in there, though, right? And leave it there for the next 2 hours or whatever.
And in order to clean it?
It's done.
Are you doing that in order to soak it? Why are you doing that?
No, in other words, it gets gross, is right?
Right, you're doing it to soak.
No, but isn't that preparation for after soup?
Yeah, right. That,
you can't do that, right? What about if you had your hand on it, though, and you're finished serving the last bowl of the soup, and your hand has not let go? Can you put water in it?
No, that doesn't make a difference.
No, it doesn't make any sense. Okay, so you just leave it dry.
Don't leave one question. The oven door.
Yes.
Storage things inside. You don't need to... Your reasoning for closing the car door so that somebody doesn't come from the outside and go into your car and take your things.
Yeah, here you could use a heter of you needed space. In other words, if you have a kitchen that's like most people's kitchen that isn't palatial, you need this. Yeah, oven door open in the kitchen is usually problematic. So I would admit.
I mean, close it part way, not the whole way.
Now, once you're allowed to move it, you can move it. In other words, right now it's in the way. Most oven doors are in the way if it's open in the kitchen. I would imagine. I don't know, unless you have a really big kitchen. It's going to be in the way.
Even then,
and you can use it as many times as you want.
Yeah, every time you need it. Yeah. As long as you need it. No, so you would not be allowed to open it to see how many pots are in there. Because it's muksa. You don't need it. And it's muksa.
You need to teach
it. Right.
The example you gave of sleeping in the car was shot, did that leave the car door open?
So I don't think you have to because you're protecting yourself, which is a valid enough. I need to close the door to protect myself from animals which roam around camps.
And what if you put something in an item that is permitted to put in? Can you close
the
door?
Yeah, right.
You can close the door.
Yeah.
Can you retrieve it later on Shabbos?
If you need it. Yeah.
And what if I've never had this problem with this. An example might apply to somebody else. Let's say you have a young family and they left the stroller in the car, and then you have Shabbos.
Right. Yeah. So if the car light will not go on right now, you need to get it. Yeah. You have something permitted in the car, and to move it for its permitted uses, okay?
Then can you close the door? Because you're not putting anything in.
Right. So then, technically speaking, you right. Unless, yeah, right. I don't think you'd be allowed to close the door. There's a
question of somebody not stealing your car, especially in the
right, no, that doesn't count. In other words, the car is inherently moksa. To close the car door because you're afraid of the car being stolen is what's in the category of moving something moksa for its own preservation or protection. And that's moksa. So just to close the car door so that nobody should steal my car is moksa. You would have to find a reason to, after retrieving your stroller, you would then have to find a reason to put something in the car that needs protecting so that you can close the door. That should fit, right.
Can you not wash any cooking pans on Shabbos, even if they
accept
to having lots of dirty dishes?
Yeah, and separate discussion.
Oh, that's
yeah, because that's a hachana issue. As far. That's not a muksa issue. I don't think that's a muksa issue. That's another word. That's if it's a the muksa issue would just allow you to take the pot and put it in the basement. In other words, to start cleaning it on Shabbos is a different issue. The Graf Shel Re'i Heter, that Heter of this is a disgusting item, says you're allowed to pick it up and remove it because it's inappropriate. So that would allow you to take your pot and put it in the stove. That would allow you to take your pot and put it in the basement. So when you start talking about soaking, that's a new discussion. One which I'm going to try to avoid tonight, so we could try to stay a little bit focused as we're running out of time quickly. Moving along, so just to run through some of these applications, sewing and knitting needles and scissors, all of those things, their primary use is prohibited. What else can you use scissors for that's permitted? Prohibited. The primary use is prohibited. What can you use scissors for? For food, opening bags or cutting rope around the roast, things like that. So it has a permitted use. You are allowed, therefore, to move a pair of scissors. Therefore, the scissors become in the category of Kli Shemalachto L'Isser. And therefore, if it's in the way, or you need the place that it's in, you are allowed to move it. Believe it or not, you are allowed to move scissors and Shabbos if you need the place. If it's in the way, if it's on the shelf, if it's on a chair, you're allowed to pick it up and move it because it has permitted usages. Its primary use is not permitted, but if you need it for its purpose, i.e. to cut a rope around the roast, or you need the place that the scissors are currently lying on, so then you are allowed to move it. What would you use it as? What were these permitted things? I don't know. He didn't bring his examples. I guess you would use it for... I don't know.
When you wouldn't use scissors on anything,
I don't know
what's
packaged. Oh, you can. Yeah, I mean, I use scissors to cut bags of food open all the time. Yeah, you can. Whereas if you have something that's easier to use, that's not prohibited, then it's better to use a knife. But if you don't have a knife, you could use a pair of scissors. Told you to be surprised. In other words, because go work it through. A scissors, the reason why scissors is prohibited is because its primary use is for something prohibited. It has secondary usages, and any time anything is in that category, like a hammer, if I need it for its permitted usages, or it's the place that it's in, I'm allowed to move it.
What can you use it? If it doesn't have permitted use, like let's say needles, I mean maybe it does, but it's in the way, you can still be allowed.
That's going to be a different category. That's not going to have that. In other words, it's something which only has a prohibited use and has no permitted use. That's going to be a separate category.
You're saying this is permissible because you need to open the food.
Yeah, you can cut the rope that's around the string. You could use things that's permitted. There's nothing wrong with doing that on Shabbos. We usually avoid these things because we just want to stay away from them,
yeah.
Which is fine. But it still happens to be that it's okay. So the same things by candlesticks and menorahs. What's the status of them? So if they were not lit, bein hashmashos, meaning they were not lit in the 18th, right between the sunset and nightfall, which is 18 minutes after candle lighting time. It was not lit during that period. So then, it has this regular status. It is now something, this happens regularly in most people's houses, and you probably haven't realized it, but if you have a break front or you have any type of place where you keep Kiddush cups, you might often also keep candlesticks in that same basic area. Sometimes your candlesticks are in the way of your benchers, candle, Kiddush cups, or whatever else you might have in there that you want to use for Shabbos, and there's this nice, fancy candlestick, candelabra, right in the way. So, what's the status of the candlesticks? They're in the break front. So, the general use of a candlestick is being held to light candles. Lit candles on Shabbos are muksa, which makes it its holder muksa. That was the concept of the bosses, which we spoke about briefly last week. Any holder of something which is muksa also becomes muksa. But you can use candlesticks for... its primary use is for something that is prohibited. So, in a situation in which I need it because it's in my way, or I need it for something permitted, I'm allowed to move it. So I would be allowed to move the candlesticks aside in order to get at whatever it is that I need, similar to the fact that I can move my hammer out of the way if it's on my shelf and I need to get a safer from behind it, because it's within this category of a klisha malachtalis, or something whose primary use is for something prohibited, where I need it, you would be allowed to move it. Okay, similarly, rulers, yardsticks, tape measures, and scales, all of those things are something which are prohibited to do on Shabbos. You're not allowed to measure things on Shabbos. But if any of those things were in the way, or you needed it for something permitted, they would be permitted to move, but they are inherently considered muksa. Now, measuring cup is subjective to how you use measuring cups in your kitchen. Some people use measuring cups primarily to measure. Measuring is forbidden on Shabbos. But if you're using it just as a cup to pour, to mix, whatever you use it for, to crack your eggs into, so that might become something whose primary use is permitted. But if you use your measuring cups primarily to measure things, then they would be within that category of something which is forbidden. But nonetheless, that just means that if you still needed a measuring cup for something permitted, you could still use it because it's within this category where if it's for something permitted, you're allowed to move. And I'm going to point out that Rabbaner Paskins, I did not know this, that a fever thermometer is not muksa at all because it is permitted to take someone's temperature on Shabbos if they are sick. Yeah, that's what he's talking about, yeah. Yeah, if you can find one.
Right,
I don't know. Yes. Correct, the digital ones are something that's a separate problem. No? Okay. Banner. Yeah. Not a digital, that's a separate problem. So in other words, that would be, so work it through. What is the status of a digital thermometer? Its primary use is for something which is now prohibited on Shabbos. You can't use it on Shabbos.
You don't use it for anything else.
But I would imagine that would fit into the category of a klisha machzel iser, and I believe that would be, if you needed it to move it, it was in the way, I guess your medicine cabinet, your mouthwash was behind it, it would sound like it should be okay. Right, so that, excellent example. So now it's on the floor. So what are you afraid of if it's on the floor? So you're afraid that it's going to break, it's going to get stepped on. That's not a read. That is the classic example in which this category is considered muksa. The only time you're allowed to move this category is if you need it or you need its place. In a situation in which that thermometer fell on the floor, that's a great example of something that's now muksa. Unless you had a concern, someone's going to get hurt or someone's going to swap. But I don't know if that's necessarily a valid concern. That's, you have to figure that out. But otherwise, that would be considered muksa and you couldn't move it. Okay, calculators, radios, and flashlights. So obviously all these things are muksa, because the primary use of all of those things are for something which is prohibited. But the reason why I want to stress these things is because if they're in the way, and you need the space that it's in, you are allowed to move it. Okay, I don't know. See, it could be that it doesn't have to be so secondary. Its primary, main definition is that some things have both. As long as its primary use is for something prohibited, that's where we're going to define it as a klisha malachtol le'iser. And these things, therefore, if you need them or in the way, you can move them. So a calculator left out that's not in the way could not be put away because you're afraid it's going to break, or it's Shabbos and you don't want a calculator out on the table. But if you need the place that it's in, it was left on your bed, it was left on a chair, it's in the way of a safer that you need on the shelf, you are allowed to move it. Similarly, electric clocks, fans, and electric blankets. All of these things are things whose primary use is for something which is prohibited to like turn these things on and use them. But if they've been turned on before Shabbos, so if you need the place that it's in, you are allowed to move them. You're allowed to push a fan to blow either on you or to blow away from you. You're allowed to move a clock that's plugged in because you can't see it from your position on the bed. You're allowed to turn it so that you can see it. Those are a situation of something whose status is a klisha malachto le'iser. And being that when you are moving it, if you're only moving it because you need it, or it's in the way, or it's not in the place where I need it to be like this, not to be like that, you are allowed to move it.
But
where you can actually turn the fan in a different direction so it blows on the people more appropriately?
Correct.
Huh. So it would be like electric water, like the water heater, would you be able to... Would they move that, like, let's say...
Electric water heater, what do you mean?
You know, like the...
Sort of like hot tea?
Yeah,
an urn?
The urn. Let's say the handle's not
a
convenient spot.
Yeah.
Right.
You would
be able to turn that,
you know,
it's on?
Right.
You can actually move that, however?
Yeah.
Now, there's one other question. If there's a flashlight in a drawer, and there's Kleenex in that drawer, you want...
Okay, we'll talk about that. That's going to be a separate question. Of the drawer becomes the buses. The drawer has become... The bearer of something which is muksa,
right.
That's going to be that discussion. So one, what happens when it's a basis for something which is both permitted and permissible? Yeah. Car keys. So car keys, which are primarily used, your ignition car keys, obviously. So that's something which is obviously primary use of something prohibited. So again, it would be muksa because you see it lying over there, and you know that if you don't put it away before Shabbos, you're going to forget where it is after Shabbos. You're not allowed to move it. It's muksa. But if it's in a place that's in the way. Or you need, I can't imagine why you would need the car key. It would just be a matter of it's in the way. Then you can move it. But that's again a hard argument to make why the car keys would be in the way and you need its place. But if that situation arises, then you are allowed to move it. But otherwise, just lying around, they are certainly muksa.
So the car keys are on top of your sitter. Can you not only move them but put them back?
Yes, right. Once you have the hetzer to move them, then you can put them wherever you need. 100%. That's correct.
Car key and your house key on the same.
Yes, that is the big question. In other words, because they're both. I don't know how we define it. I was wondering that as I was working through this, because that often is the case where you have a key ring with both. The car key is obviously muksa. I don't know if we go based on that it becomes it's more significant or that it takes on a status of I'm moving the one which is permitted for me to move and I now need it to go. I have to look that one up also. That's a very practical situation. It happens all the time. That's another answer. So another, what was the other question I was supposed to be looking up? I really forgot. I looked that one up. Spiderweb is okay on Shabbos. Thank you for reminding me. There are some posts, the four-volume red English book, as I saw, I discussed it. Some posts can actually hold, you're not allowed to break a spiderweb on Shabbos, but because most posts are not machmer like that. I would say that, assuming that you need the place that it is, and just to go and break them for fun is one thing, but because you need to get through, you'd be allowed to...
The other one is taking something out of the garbage that you want.
Right. Okay, let me just get through these last one here. A couple last ones. Tefillin. Tefillin comes up often where they're in the way. You have a tefillin bag somewhere and whatever it is. So the same status, if you need its place, then you're allowed to move it. Because again, it has to be, if you need it, we can't use it on Shabbos, but if you need its place, you are allowed to move it.
But you know that we need its place, that's what I understand. If it's still in here, and there's, three
floor
in here, and you want this one.
Right, that same thing, I need it, it's in my way. It is in a place, yeah.
You then say the store.
Mm-hmm.
What if the towels and store are in the same bag?
Same thing.
You can.
Yes. Okay. Meaning to move, you need to get, what's the towels out?
Yeah, for sure.
Right. That's a situation which I need this, yeah. That's what he wrote specifically, that example. I'll see if I can run is Prince waiting outside already? Okay, toy musical instruments, pens, staplers, umbrellas, toothbrushes, all of these things, hairbrushes, bikes, things which are generally forbidden to use on Shabbos. Toy musical instruments are for older children. We'll speak about that more in a greater length. And pens and staples, all of these things all fit in that category where generally it's muksa. So just to move, to put it away is a problem. These things, if they were left out, and that's the common problem we have with all of these things, they were left out before Shabbos. So just to put it away, you could not do. But if you need the place that it's in, so all of these things would be permitted to be moved for that. Scrabble. So Scrabble is prohibited to play on Shabbos because of Gzeir Hashem Yichtov. Maybe you're going to come to write. Any game which usually has writing affiliated with it during the week, so then that game is prohibited to play on Shabbos out of a fear that you're going to come to write. So therefore, this game becomes a game which primary function is something which is forbidden on Shabbos, and therefore just to put away would be a problem. But again, if it's in a place in which you need it, we'd be okay to move. Scrabble might have a bigger problem in the deluxe editions in which you where there are slots and you put the letters in, that has a ksiva problem. It's actually considered writing when you put the letters together because they're in a permanent way. That's what I said. But even if you don't have that, you still have a problem of it being muksa because you might come to write. And similarly, a jigsaw puzzle is a problem with ksiva. An adult or older child's puzzle is also prohibited to do on Shabbos because it's considered ksiva. You're putting together shapes and forms and or letters, and therefore would have the same status in which it's muksa, unless you need the place that it's in. But otherwise, to put it away would be considered muksa. Younger children's puzzles are different. We'll talk about that because the primary use of that is for little kids, and little kids don't have that problem. Okay, that's it because our parents are waiting. We will talk more about this, Mitzvah Hashem, next week.